God of nations, at thy feet, in the bonds of love we meet. Hear our voices, we entreat. God, defend our free land. I just chose to start that little prayer, which, as many of you might or might not know, is the first verse in English of the New Zealand National Anthem. And I pay special mention of it today because in amongst our congregation today are those who come from South Africa, to which the All Blacks had a victory over yesterday on the rugby field, on the holy ground of Eden Park in Auckland. I was on the edge of my seat yelling and swearing at my TV as much as I can swear, hoping that the victory would be ours. And now 50 games on that ground, victorious games, won't be broken by the South Africans, who are currently the World Cup holders, and that we would be victorious in the fact that the last time South Africa beat us on that park was in 1937. So it was a glorious day for many reasons yesterday, and one in particular, as we acknowledge Father's Day today, was a young father who was recognised by playing 100 test matches for the All Blacks. And his wife and children presented him with a special cap recognising that milestone. So it was a lovely way to come into celebrating Father's Day today in that realm that is all of New Zealand males, rugby, racing and all such things. But also in the fact that yesterday or Friday night, my youngest son took the field as the captain of the New Zealand area schools in rugby, and they were victorious. So watching him, possibly the future of Silver Ferns, and then watching the All Blacks the next day, reminded me of the things that God gifts us with. And when we take that opportunity to nurture and embrace those giftings and be the best version of ourselves as he created us to be. So that's my start. The sun rose on the 19th of March 1948 when Mohi Tawhai Chesley and Mereana Whātākai Campbell gave birth to their eldest child, a son they named Honore Arapeta, who 20 years later met and married Mihi Arihia, the fourth child and third daughter of Iraihia and Mihi Matakai Matahiki. 4 months later, they gave birth to a daughter and named her Jacqueline Ray, who 3 months later was baptised into the Church of England and began her faith journey here on earth that 53 years later brought her to WA, leaving behind her husband and their 7 children, a grandson, a mum, 7 siblings and their families, to take up her cross and come to serve her Lord amongst her people and those who were a part of the Anglican Church in the Diocese of Bunbury and also Perth. 3 years after my arrival, I found myself being called to leave my full-time stipended assistant priest role to come and serve in this parish on a 0.5 stipend, because I believe the Lord had moulded me and prepared me over those 3 years in particular to be of greater service to him here. I've come to appreciate with great love, awe and admiration the hearts, hands, minds of the many who give of time and energy to serve as volunteers that enable this parish to follow Christ in serving the least, last and lost in our community. So when I saw what our reading was for today in the Gospel, I took time to think about what I had given up for Christ. And that's my question to you today. What have you given up for Jesus? Take a moment to think about the question. It is not a challenge. Rather, it's an opportunity to reflect. In today's Gospel reading, Jesus offers insight into what it means to be a disciple and what that discipleship might cost. The reading points to possessions, family connections, and even one's own life as things that disciples will shun and even hate in order to follow Christ. In the letter of St. Paul to Philemon, as we heard Eric read today, we see how discipleship has cost Paul and others mentioned in this letter their freedom as they are imprisoned for their faith. But what about us? What does our discipleship cost? The first cost to us is time. In order to be a disciple of Jesus, we must spend time learning about Jesus, praying, worshipping, and sharing with others. In each and every variation of Christianity, there is a commitment of time which forms a part of being a member of the church or faith community. Some spend more time in community, meeting together for study and worship. Others expect disciples to spend more time in solitary prayer and reflection. There is no right or wrong amount of time, but we can all agree that in order to be a disciple, we have to give some time to the practice and pursuit of discipleship. Another cost to us might be in how we are viewed in society by friends or within our family. It may well be that we have a Christian family and most of our friends are Christian too, so we don't feel too much like our faith costs us in these aspects. But there will certainly be people in our lives who will not hold our faith, even if we are not particularly closely related with these people. Perhaps they are work colleagues or neighbours, maybe members of a community association or sports club that we attend. Recent census information tells us that we are likely to come across people in our lives who do not share our faith. And for some of them, this might impact their opinion of us. Radical atheism would have people believe that faith is a sign of weakness or stupidity, which may make those who follow it a little wary of us. Others will have been impacted by church scandals and public messages in the name of Christians, which they find offensive, and we might be assumed to be a part of the problem, even if we have never been involved with or agree with them. We cannot pretend that we are persecuted in society here in Australia as our sisters and brothers elsewhere in the world are. But our faith may cost us some relationships. Our faith, lived well and actively, will cost us our energy. There is a requirement to focus and expend energy on anything we choose to do. Our faith pursuits are no different, and our energy levels are finite. There is only so much we can do, only so many projects we can attend to, only a fixed amount of effort and brain power we can use before we become tired and need to recharge. When we choose to expend energy on faith-based pursuits, we may have to give up or pass over on other interests that we hold. This won't be true for everyone. But for some, there is so much more they would wish to partake in that they are able to. There is also the question of our financial support of our faith. Those who are members of churches and regularly attend will have come to some decision about stewardship of their resources, understood as God's providence bestowed on them, and how that can be used to resource the church. More generally, resourcing charitable undertakings and offering gifts of money and goods to various ministries are all a part of discipleship. Jesus' teaching comes back to this time and again. Personally accumulated wealth and pious faith are incompatible, says Jesus. We cannot serve two masters. God and mammon, or as in today's reading, giving up possessions is a prerequisite for being a disciple. On reflection, we give up a great deal to be disciples. The cost is tangible and measurable in many ways. Jesus challenges his disciples in the gospel reading today to understand this cost and to pay it with full disclosure and understanding. In his parables, he reminds them that before taking on any task, the wise person will look at the size of the task and its cost before making a start to ensure they have the resources to complete the work. That makes sense when we're talking about building a tower or fighting a battle. But what about being a disciple? How do we know that we have enough resources to pay the costs involved in being a disciple? Our first cost was time, and that is out of our control. We may have to work and have other responsibilities, but time is not only measured in quantity, but also in quality. We can spend lots of time doing the work of discipleship, but we can also be disciplined to spend a little bit of time as often as we can and achieve the same goal of prioritizing time to the pursuit of discipleship. The next cost was relationships, and that is a difficult one. No one wants to find that being a Christian isolates them from the ones they love or in a totally different country to them. But we are resourced for our relationships by Jesus' example and by the grace of God. Jesus showed us that love is the way, always. When it comes to people, and so our call is to care for and love those around us, whatever their view of us might be. We need not separate ourselves from people who do not believe what we do. Jesus mixed with those that his followers least expected and certainly didn't limit his friends to certain types of people. Where we are rejected by another or others, the grace of God is our sustaining resource. We can continue to recognize the love God has for them, even when they cannot recognize it themselves. Our energy expended needs to be managed and resourced. And Jesus was clear that he came to give life and to give it to the full. Rest and recuperation are not signs of weakness or failure. Rather, this is a faithful following of the example of Jesus, who regularly withdrew from public ministry to spend time alone and with God. We need not avoid rest. We should embrace it. Our example of managing energy can serve as an example to others in the ever-increasing pace of life. It is not something we do to manage our faith. It is completely integrated with and a requirement of discipleship. Finally, the financial material cost of discipleship. Our understanding of stewardship is far wider than how much we donate to our church. It encompasses not only our finances, but also our care and nurturing of the earth and other resources. There is no quick fix to share of how much is the right amount to give. Rather, we're invited to respond to God's grace with love. Jesus' own teaching on stewardship of resources celebrates the tiniest offerings given in love over the larger donations done for self-aggrandizement. It is for each of us to contribute in response to God, and we use prayer and scripture to guide us. The final words of today's gospel in reference to salt: faith should be a salt in our lives. We integrate it and benefit from its flavor in everything we do. And in so doing, our discipleship ceases to become a project and instead becomes who we are. Are we able to complete the race, finish the course, and fulfill our discipleship commitments? Jesus asks. As with so much else in our Christian lives, the answer is the same. By the grace of God, we will. For reasons unknown to me, my parents didn't make a home together after the wedding or my birth. I never met my father till I was 12 years old, at the end of my primary schooling. At the age of about 7, I had this great thought to follow my friends in my class who were bored, and I coloured my nails with a felt-tip pen, purple. I got home to show them off to my grandmother because I was being raised by my maternal grandparents. And my grandmother said to me, and I say this often to my own daughters, if God wanted you to have purple fingernails and blue eyelids, he would have given them to you. Now go to see your grandfather and get that all scrubbed off. So we went out under the lemon tree with a bucket and sand soap, and my grandfather scrubbed off the felt tip pen off my fingers. And while he was torturing me, because it felt like torture, I said to him, Dad, as I called him, are you my dad? The kids at school say I don't have a dad. Are you that? My grandfather looked at me and he said, yes, I'm your dad. Years later, as I matured and became a parent myself, I came to realise, how could he have been my dad and my mum's dad? That's not right. My father remarried and had 5 children to his second wife. My maternal grandparents died 2 weeks apart when I was 15. When I became a parent, I made it my business to get to know my dad, his wife, and their children. In April 2004, we lost my stepmum to breast cancer. In January 2005, we lost my dad to a broken heart. Today, on this Father's Day, I give thanks to the Father who knitted me together in my mother's womb, to the Father whose DNA I bear and carry, and to the grandfather I called Dad. Our Father in heaven, holy be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us. But deliver us from evil. Do not lead us to the test, but deliver us from evil. For the kingdom, the power, and the glory are yours, now and forever.